Good morning. And so today we will continue our analysis of the space of measure by studying what is called the Wasserstein distances, which are some kind of generalization of the Mohn-Kondratovich distance we saw yesterday. And then we will start our analysis of the differentiability of function defined on the space of measures. Okay. So let me remind you briefly what we explained yesterday. So I share the screen. I hope you can see. So yesterday I introduced the notion of Mohn-Kondratovich distance. So let me remind you that capital X is a metric space. And we were looking at probability measure. So probability measure is the space P of X. And the space P1 of X was a set of probability measure having a finite first order moment, okay, meaning that for some point X0, and actually for any point X0, the integral over X of the distance of X to X0 integrated against the measure M is finite. Okay, so we look at this space, and on this space, on this subspace of probability measure, we define the Mohn-Kondratovich distance as follows. So remember that we know that two measures are equal if tested against any continuous bounded function. They give the same quantity, okay? And here, to define the Mohn-Kondratovich distance, we look at the function phi, which are from capital X to R, and which are one Lipschitz continuous with constant one, okay? And we integrate the difference of the measure M and M prime against phi, and we take the supremum over phi. So it's a distance, and we have seen several properties. So for instance, we have seen that it's the main property is the fact that it's a distance which metricizes the weak convergence, in the sense that a sequence of measure in P1 converges to a measure in P1 for the distance D1. If Mn converge narrowly to M. And on the other hand, if the moments converge, the moment of Mn converge to the moment of M. And we explained a little bit how it works. So this gives you a way to metricize the narrow convergence of measure. Okay, and to it's not only the point is not only to metricize, but also to quantify, of course, this convergence, because the distance between Mn and M quantify a little bit the convergence, the narrow convergence. We have also seen that the space P1 of X or P of X appears very naturally when we study function of depending of a lot of variable. So if Un goes from the metric space to the power capital N to R, and we see capital N as a large integer, okay, then under suitable assumption, we can prove that Un up to a subsequence converge to some function defined on the space of measure. So the limit of function depending of a lot of variable is naturally a function depending on measure. Okay, and what we will see today in the second part of the course is what happens with the derivatives, in fact. If you do the same, if you assume that Un is not only continuous, here we're assuming that somehow it's uniformly continuous, okay? So this was this condition. But if we assume that Un is also of class C1, what happened to the derivative and how do we pass to the derivative as capital N goes to infinity? And somehow we will try to answer this question in the second hour of the course today. But in the meantime, what we will do is to give a kind of generalization of the Mohn-Kondratovich distance, because it will be slightly more convenient for the rest of the course. So now I'm going to use a new file. So here it is. Okay. Stefan, can you tell me if you see the new file plainly? And
I
I'm going
see
to
the
write.
new file, yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so I'm going to write it. So now we are going to study the Wasserstein distance. So can you see me writing? Is that okay?
Yes, everything is fine.
So it's again a distance on the space of measure. So I remind you that X D is a metric space. And I fix some P larger than one. So typically P is equal to one as we saw before, or P can be two also, which is very useful, and usually I will use P as the definition for P equal to. So the natural extension of the space of probability measure with first order finite first order moment is the set of probability measure with, so the set M of, sorry, the set M of Borel probability measure with P finite order moment. So I remind you that X naught is some fixed point in the space, which plays no role in the story. Okay, and here you have here. To the power P, M of dx is finite. So this is a set of measure which have a finite P first order, P order moment, okay? And on this space, we are going to introduce a distance. And this is what is called the Wasserstein distance of weight P, so which is defined in the following way. If you take two measures in this space, then you call the distance between the two measures. Okay, somehow there is no completely equivalent of what I wrote for P equal one. So I'm going to change the point of view and we'll try to say how much they are close in terms of coupling. So this will be the infimum over the set of probability measure P in the product space X times X. So P is a measure on the product, okay, which links the measure M and M prime in the sense that the first order margin, so P1, I will be more precise in a moment. Okay, so P1 is the first order margin of P, must be equal to M, and P2 must be equal, which is the second order margin of P, must be equal to M prime. Okay, and in order and the weight we put on P is the following, so integrate over the product space, the distance to the power P of X and then Y, that we integrate against P, and this is one of the P. Okay, so here you recognize a natural kind of LP norm against the measure P of the distance function, okay? And here, so by P1 and P2, I just mean the first and second order marginals. So where the integral of phi of x, P1 of x, by definition, for any test function phi, integrate over x, sorry. Of one of x, this is equal to the integral over the product phi of x, p of dx, dy. Okay, and you have the sum, so this is the definition of the measure P1, and the definition of the measure P2 is symmetric. You just take the integral pi of y P2 of y. And this is the same object, okay, except that you integrate pi of y instead of pi of x. Okay, so you have this definition. And it's not completely immediate, but you can prove, but it's not an exercise. I mean, it's a theorem which says that this is a distance. And so dp is a distance.
Excuse me, there's a question about the product measure, if it is unique.
Yes, go ahead. I can't see. Can you read me the
yes, the sorry, the product measure is not unique, the question.
What do you mean?
The P.
The P is not unique. No, there are plenty of ways. So of course, among the P's, there is a product measure M times M prime, okay? Which the measure is completely separated. But you could have plenty of other measure. So for instance, okay, I'm going to give an example to show you what can happen, okay? But you will see very easily if... I finish my sentence and I give an example of product measure satisfying this kind of condition. So dp is a distance on dp of x, okay? And so as I said, there are usually plenty of elements in this space. So take the case where m equal m prime, for instance. Okay, so then there are at least, I mean, there are infinitely many possibilities because the set of measure which satisfies this condition is a convex set. Okay, but I can show you two of them. Okay, so then you can take p, which is the product measure, which satisfies the condition. Okay, so even if m is not equal to m prime, this product measure satisfies the condition which are here, okay? But there is another one, which is the following. This one satisfies the condition, let me give the condition, let me call them star, satisfies star. So there is another one which satisfies. So, but you see, if you take this one, okay, there is absolutely no reason why this quantity should be zero, why the distance between M and M should be zero, since it's a distance, okay? So if you take this choice, this quantity is not zero. However, if you take the measure, so the other measure, so I'm going to define another pi, okay? So let me call it pi tilde, defined by, so I don't know if you see what kind of measure. So I take m equal m prime, okay, and I want a measure pi which satisfies this condition, which says that this is zero, okay. So I don't know if you see that, but it's pretty transparent that it must put a weight, all its weight, on the diagonal. So it means that pi must be such that pi almost surely, pi almost everywhere, you have that y equals x, okay? And this is a measure that we define. So this is the integral over x. So to define it, I test against a continuous function on the product space, okay? So this function, this p tilde must be defined. So for any test function phi, you probably guess already, it's just phi of, it must be, its support must be the diagonal, so it must be x, and p, so the sorry, it's not p, it's m, okay, the support must be, the marginal must be m on both sides, because I assume that m equal n prime, so it's dx. Okay, so you see, even in the case where m equal m prime, you have two choices. This one, which is kind of extreme, which is which for which the quantity here is somehow maximal, if you want, and the quantity, the pi tilde here, for which indeed you have that if you replace phi by the distance, okay, you see that the distance of x, y integrated against pi tilde must be zero because it's the distance between x and x. Okay, so in this case, we see that, for instance, the distance between m and m, the p distance between m and m, can be zero. I hope this answers the question. So actually, the set of measure which satisfy this kind of condition is a convex set. It's a compact convex, it's a compact convex set, so that this infimum, in fact, is a minimum, okay? It's a compact because it's tight, actually. So this infimum is a minimum, okay? It's not empty because it always contain M, the tensor product M, tensor M prime. But it's not in general reduced to that. Okay, so maybe to better emphasize that, let me write it in terms of random variable, as I did before. So in terms of random variable, so remember what I did, I'm sorry, yeah. Oops. As you can see, I've got some problem with the connection. Okay, I hope it won't be worse later. Okay, so remember that we fixed a probability basis omega fp. Okay, where omega is atomless probability space. Okay, so fix this. So let me, I won't write again. I mean, this is as before. Okay, and you can express the distance dp as follows. So this is just a simple extension. So, I mean, this is a simple rewriting of what I wrote before, of the definition. So this is the infimum over all random variables. So again, there is this ambiguity with x. So x now is a random variable which takes its values in the space x, in the metric space x, which is here, okay? And I'm assuming that the law of x is m, and the law of y, which is another random variable which takes its values in x, okay? So the law of y is n prime, okay? And the way we connect x and y is the difference between x minus y Sorry, it's a distance. To x minus y, to x from x to y to the power p. Okay, and you take one of the p. Okay, so you have this equality, which is now completely straightforward. So I must apologize. I'm not sure, but I think that yesterday I said you can prove that d1 is equal to this quantity with p equal 1. As an exercise, it was not an exercise at all. I realized this morning, and this pretty tough result stated with the definition I gave for p equal 1. Okay, so now this is completely transparent, because once you have a pair of random variable y and y, x and y, this you can call pi its law, okay, and it's a law on x times x. Okay, so it is completely, it's almost clear that this quantity is exactly the same as this quantity here, okay? So this is really, the proof is really an exercise now. Okay. So yes, so for p equal one, this gives you, this gives you three different definition of the distance d1. Okay, there is this definition I gave today. This one, which is clearly the same, okay, and I let it to you as an exercise. And there is the one I gave yesterday. So let me say a few words about the relation between the two. I hope I don't go too fast. So there is a theorem, and this is a not too easy theorem. Which is a particular case of what is called the Kantorovich duality. Okay, so for p equal one, all the definitions are equivalent. The definition of consistence. Okay, so in the sense, the definition I gave three different definitions of d1, and they are all the same. Okay, so I'm going to give the proof of this, because it gives you tools for studying problems in this area, and it's a little bit important. So I'm going to take the definition of yesterday with the subcommon of function of which are one Lipschitz of the integral of phi of the integral of phi n minus m prime, and show you how we get the definition here. And I'm going to do it in a particular case, because the general case is much more intricate. So I'm going to assume that X is compact. And the general setting can be, you can find it in the book of Ambrosio Gilles Savary or in the book of Sant'Ambrogio. And I forgot to quote the books of Villani also on the topic. So here I'm assuming that X is compact, which makes life much, much easier. Okay, and the reason why I'm doing this proof is that it obliges me to introduce a result which is important in practice, which is a Sion min-max theorem that you probably have seen already, which is interesting in itself. So it's based on the proof of the equality. So what I'm going to prove is that the distance, the d1 defined as the as a sup over one Lipschitz function is equal to the d1 defined above as the infimum of a coupling pi. Okay, so The proof of this equality is based on Sion's min-max theorem. We say the following. So it says that if F goes from the pair of space A times B into R, and if you assume that AB are closed and convex with A compact, so I've got a function of two variables, okay? So both sets A and B are convex of some convex subset of some topological space. I assume that A is compact and that F is convex with respect to the first variable and concave with respect to the second variable. This is the reason why. Okay, and I'm interested in the means of the So the rest of the assumption is that F is convex, so it's convex with respect to the first variable. And it is lower semi-continuous. So LSC stands for lower semi-continuous. F of X, so if I fix X, it is concave with the second variable. Okay. Then you have the min-max theorem in the sense that the mean, so this is the mean for the first variable, so for A in capital A of the soup over B in capital B of X of A B. This is equal, so you can exchange the slope and the mean in the following sense. It's it's my assumption, it's clearly a mean. So. Okay, so you know that this quantity without condition without condition on A, B, and F, this quantity is always less than this quantity, okay? And under suitable convexity assumption and regularity assumption, you have the equality, okay? So this min-max theorem, you can find it almost everywhere, in particular in Wiki, if you are interested. And there are plenty of extensions. So this is called Sion's min-max theorem, and I don't know why everything was erased. Oops. Okay. Anyway. So I'm going to use this result to prove the equality between the two definitions of D1. Okay. And so let me start the proof. Okay, so I start with the definition with the pi, in fact. So this is the infimum. Over pi 1 equal m, pi 2 equal n prime. So I'm doing this for p equal 1, okay? So this is the integral of the distance of x, y. Pi of dx. Okay, so what I'm going to do is that I'm going to put these conditions into the criterion. Okay, so this is a classical way to do that. I'm going to penalize to change this quantity in order to ensure that it is the criterion will be plus infinity if these two conditions are not satisfied. So I can rewrite this expression as the infimum of a pi, which is a probability, which is not a probability, sorry, which is a positive, which is a non-negative measure on x times x. Okay, of the same quantity. But I need a penalization to say that the first marginal must be m and the second marginal must be m prime. So because, sorry, I should let some place. And this penalization will take the form of two functions. Two continuous functions, so it will be the soup over phi and psi, which are two continuous functions on x. And so I keep this expression, okay, so d of x, y, g of dx, dy. And now I penalize this two equalities by putting the integral of phi of x p of dx dy. Minus m of dx. Okay, and I do the same for, so this takes care of the first marginal, okay, because it says that if the first marginal of P is not M, I can take phi very large, okay, and I can take phi very negative, okay, so this becomes plus infinity, okay, and this penalizes, okay, of course, since I'm doing an infimum, I don't have interest to have plus infinity in this quantity, okay, and I do the same, so it's, when I'm integrating always on the product space. And I do the same for the second order marginal. Okay, so it's a way to put the constraint into the functional. Okay, and now I don't have constraint on P except that it is non-negative measure.
Is there a chance that you have here a plus infinity and minus infinity at the same time?
No, because you take the soup. Okay, I'm in a compact setting anyway. Okay, so phi and psi are bounded. This is the reason why I'm always in compact setting here, and because it's the proof in non-compact set is not that obvious. Okay.
Yeah.
So here there wouldn't be any issue. I would take continuous and bounded. It would work in the same way. But when using the min-max theorem, then I would be in. Incidentally, I realize that I'm cheating. Okay, okay. So let me rewrite everything here. Okay, so that's the infimum over pi of the supremum over phi and psi. So I rewrite that in the following way. So I put everything concerning p in the same at the same place. And what remains is the integral now only on x of phi of m dx plus integral of psi of y m prime of t. Okay, and then, okay, as, I'm going to cheat a little bit. So the set of measure here is not compact, okay? But I mean, when you restrict the mass, it's compact. So it's not too difficult. So here I'm going to put some quotes because the proof is not completely complete at that level. So somehow you have to restrict yourself to masses which are finite, okay? So I'm going to use Sion's theorem in a loose way by doing as if this set of measure on this product space was compact, but you have to be a little bit more careful than that, okay? So I'm going to exchange the sup and the inf. So, and the same quantity. Okay, so I'm cheating a little bit by doing as if this set, which is convex, was also compact, and this is true if you restrict the mass, okay? So if you have to play a little bit with this restriction, but it's not extremely difficult. Okay, and then, so you have this sup and this inf here. Okay. And now what happens if I take the infimum, so you see that P only appears in the first term, okay? And I'm taking this infimum over P. Okay, so what does it mean? Since P is a non-negative measure, this obliges, so, and can have a mass which is as large as I want, this obliges this quantity to be non-positive. Okay, so in fact, so, and now if it's non-positive, since P is non-negative, the best P you can take is zero. Okay, so in fact, this quantity is the same as the sup over phi and psi, which are such that, so now I've got a constraint on phi and psi, which is d of x, y, minus phi of x, minus phi of y, which is non, which is, sorry, I made a mistake somewhere. I'm sorry, it's an infimum, okay? So, my mistake. It's an infimum, so this quantity, if this quantity is negative at some place, okay? I can take P, a Dirac mass at the place where it's negative, multiply this Dirac mass by as much as I want, okay? By a positive number, and this makes me minus infinity, okay? So this quantity cannot be negative, and so it's non-positive, so it's non-negative, okay? So we are taking now, so it's exactly the same as taking the supremum over all phi and psi, which satisfies this inequality, okay? And what remains, since if this quantity is always non-negative, I must take pi equal zero in order to take the infimum, okay? So what remains is only the integral over phi m plus psi m prime, okay? And now I have to handle this inequality, and this inequality says the following. It says that I want to take the supremum, okay? So I want these two quantities to be as large as possible. So for instance, if I fix phi, okay, this phi, then I can take psi as I want, but as large as possible. So as psi of y is always below this quantity, okay, the best choice of psi is the supremum over y of this quantity. Okay, so given if I fix phi, okay, the best choice for the best choice for psi is the supremum over y of this quantity. Okay, I want it to be as large as possible. It must satisfy this constraint. Okay, so the best I can take is this quantity. And this quantity, you can see it's one which is continuous. Okay. So given psi, given phi, okay, I know that psi must be one Lipschitz continuous. Okay. So the same argument shows that phi must be also Lipschitz continuous. Okay, but if phi is one Lipschitz continuous, okay, you see that this quantity must be, if phi is one Lipschitz continuous, this quantity is nothing but minus phi of y. Okay, so the best psi I can take in this case, okay. If you assume that phi is one Lipschitz, this quantity is always what am I saying? I'm sorry, I'm doing some mistake here. Yeah, I think the best choice must be phi equal y, but I don't, sorry. I don't see why. So the best choice here must be minus phi of y, okay? But I'm not completely sure why it's the case. The argument is more or less this one, but I've got a gap here, okay? So, no, I apologize. I was too fast in my preparation, and then I don't remember exactly how it works. Okay, so. Since I'm stuck, it's a good time to stop. But the idea of the proof is really the one I gave here. Okay, except that the end is a little bit the end I gave is a little bit messy. So I apologize. Okay, so I think it's a good time to stop, and we meet again at 9:15. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.